Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers of the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. You can go to the websites, JackieCation.com and DorkForest.com. JackieCation.com has DorkForest.com. It has the audio links. It has the video links to my YouTube. It has all of my dates for stand-up comedy. It has all the merch. It's got Dork Forest merch and stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs if you have those devices. Other things you can do, Bandcamp. There's a Bandcamp with the very old episodes. Some of them are free. And then there's a storytelling album that you can get on my Bandcamp. And I'm on Pandora and Spotify. It is 2025, and feel free to start donating to the Dork Forest. Yeah, cost me about 10 grand a year to put this up. If everybody donated $100 every year, if everybody just handed me $100 every time they saw me, or PayPal, Venmo, then I would have, I think, about 10 grand. I don't know, but I would have enough money to run this and probably buy myself lunch. And I'm a big fan of doing the show. I'll do it anyway. But if you have $100, send me $100. If you have $2, send me $2. You can do it monthly on PayPal. There's buttons all over my website. And my Venmo is just my name. No hyphen. Jackie Cation. I'm wearing a red shirt. Let's get into the show.
Okay.
You guys, it's the Dork Forest. I'm Jackie Cation, head ranger, or at least a ranger, a worker among workers, my fellow rangers. Let's say that. Welcome to the program. A return guest. This guy, the word minutia comes up. And I have to say that it's a delight. You know him, you love him. It's Brian Kiley, you guys. And his Instagram is Kiley Brian Comic. It'll be in the notes. He's a great comic. Wrote for Conan for at least, 40 years? 50 years?
I think it was close to 90 years.
Right, right. It was back when Conan was just a baby. And you were like, I got baby jokes. I can do this monologue. I can do it. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. It was so nice to see you the other day.
I know. We saw each other and I was like, you know, it's a gimme that I see people that I like and I'm just like, would you like to do the Dork Forest? And you're like, well, I actually have an idea. And so of things that you are dorking out about right now. And it is a variety of historical moments.
Yes.
Are we doing this linear? Linear?
There's no random order.
Oh, you're jumping around.
I'm jumping around. I hope this is interesting to people. I don't know. Are there parameters in terms of swearing and things like that? Because sometimes there's
foul language. Okay. Make it happen. I think the audience wants to hear Brian Kiley swear. It's just something.
I'd be quoting someone else. You know, here's the thing. Do you get in this situation where, like, when you watch comedy, you're not laughing often, but you're thinking, that's funny, that kind of thing?
Right, unless they're eating it, and you know they're funny, and then I laugh out loud.
Oh, yes, that is the funniest.
That is the funniest.
It's so much funnier when a friend screws up a joke than tells a killer joke. I'm much more apt to laugh. Really
killer
hard.
Joke, I just go, oh, my God, that was just such a great joke.
Yes.
And I said that out loud, actually. There was a young man on stage, one of the youth. He was on stage at the Peacock stage at Club Teehee. And I didn't see where the joke was going. And then it went somewhere super interesting and funny. And I turned to a stranger next to me and said, oh, I didn't see that, Kevin. That was great.
That guy
was unmoved.
There's something about a comic, a friend of screwing up a joke. I'll tell you a story, and I got to change this guy's name to Mike Smith.
Okay.
Was it Mike Schmidt? No.
Okay.
He was a magician, and he would do an act where he would say, if you like my act, my name is Mike Smith, and if you don't like my act, my name is Doug Henning.
Right,
and
right.
So one night was a rough crowd, and he said, if you like my act, I'm Doug Henning. And you could just see the pain on his face where he realized, uh-oh.
That's then, a classic, though. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. And that very same show, the same rough crowd, my friend Bill Broadus had a joke about. He said, his joke was, I wore an earring in college, not a pierced one, a clip-on. Okay. So that same show, he said, I wore an earring in college, not a clip-on, a pierced one. Once again,
the audience had clearly walked through like some sort of weird hex.
Yes.
They did. And made all comics do their jokes backwards.
Yes. And I don't know what it is, the delight when someone blows it and you know they blew it.
Everybody knows. Yeah. I understand last night, Jesus Christ Superstar at the Hollywood Bowl, mm-hmm. that one of the actors flubbed a line. And, you know, it's almost entirely musical. Like, there's very few talking. But he just kept going, as you do. And I hope it was Judas.
I hope it was Judas. Not a good guy.
Right. Just in the end, that would have been the guy who would have been the one who did it.
Yes.
I forgot to ask if it was Judas, because that's hilarious. I'm going to write that down and ask my friend Nina, who went and saw it. She said it was better than everybody says it was, and everybody says it was extraordinary.
Wow.
So she lost her goddamn mind, Brian Kiley.
Wow.
And I love Hair, actually. I saw Hair accident. Was it Hair did I see accidentally? No. Hair I saw accidentally. Jesus Christ Superstar I saw on purpose.
And which did you like better?
Well, I felt tricked by Hair because it was sad. Yes. And Jesus Christ Superstar, I knew how it ended. So.
You know, I can't go to Hair because I'd get a lot of like smirking looks. You know what I mean?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows as much as you know that you don't have any hair, Brian Kiley. Nobody's looking. Nobody's looking. Right. Nobody's looking at my jowls. I have to. I have jowls now because I've aged into the point where, because for decades, we're just going to talk about this, I guess, for 10 minutes. Sure. Everything but the thing you want to talk about. With the aging process, mm-hmm. for years, nobody knew how old I was because being slightly overweight, it fills in all the lines. And then you hit a moment where everyone's like, oh, no, she's aging. And they're not wrong. I am aging. There's nothing to be done about it.
We're all aging.
Yeah. There's no. Yeah. It's a way.
I had the opposite where I went bald so early. People assumed I was in my 60s.
Oh, before.
And I was in my early
20s. You were in your early 20s when you went bald.
Yes, I was 22.
Oh, my gosh. You remember it distinctly.
I do. It was May 3rd, around 2:05 p.m.
Excellent. And it all just fell out.
It was, yes. I don't know what. Something traumatic happened.
You know, I have a theory. Yes.
You do.
About baldness.
Mm-hmm. What do you got?
I think it's God's way of saying, you got a good-looking head. We got to get that hair out of the way. That's my theory.
Where was that theory when I was 22?
I don't know, but it should have been whoever dated you and now your wife.
I know, right. I mean, now I'm at the age where I'm supposed to be bald. So it's kind of like, you know, but people didn't know how, people assumed I was much older for the longest time. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So people will see me and go, you always look the same. It's like, yes, because when I was in my 20s, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
speaking of history,
yes.
What do you want? So are we doing it by topic?
No, it's totally random. This is what happens.
It's random.
To me.
What happens?
I will watch a sitcom or something and not laugh. And my daughter used to get so mad at me because our thing together, we would watch sitcoms together and we'd watch Modern Family or something. And she'd be like, you're not laughing. I'm like, no, it's good. And I was sincere. It's just that as a comic, you're kind of analyzing and also, you know, that we've been joked out. You know what I mean?
Right. And some of the jokes are we've heard them and you're just like, absolutely. Okay, I see what they did there.
Yes.
And then, yes.
So, but I will read a history book where I'm not expecting anything and something will make me laugh because it's totally the last thing you're expecting when you're reading a history book and have something funny in there.
Oh, it's like a keynote speaker. Those guys get laughs easy.
Yes.
Because nobody's expecting anything from them.
So when you're reading a 500-page history book, and in page 300, there's something funny. You're like, They have set you up for...
Right.
Of course, there's not going to be anything funny. So these are random.
So those are them.
Those are them. So these are random things that I found humorous in non-humorous situations.
I sometimes get a philosophy in the middle of a romance novel. Not expected.
Right.
Not expecting a lot of wisdom.
Yes.
Not expecting sort of something pithy and smart and amazing.
Yes.
And yet it happens regularly. I mean, that's...
To me, recently, I rewatched Inglourious Basterds.
Okay.
And there's a line there where Sam Rockwell says something about the snowfalls of yesteryear.
Oh.
And I thought, what an unusual line. It just didn't seem like a normal line of dialogue. So I Googled it. And of course, it's from a poem. And what it's talking about is sort of the fleetingness of life. And that you have a snowfall, and the snowfall, it melts away, and it all just disappears. And how our memories are all like that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's beautiful.
But it was beautiful and unexpected in a Quentin Tarantino, you know.
Right. I'm going to stabity stab stab and then shoot 9 million people.
Yes.
Movie. Yeah.
And then
there's
a beautiful line of poetry that you go, oh, that's a good point. You know what I mean?
Quentin Tarantino, also a person. Hard to believe. But he could appreciate beauty. We didn't know.
Absolutely.
But there it is.
There it is. All right. So the first one, and this is in a book also, and it's also in a movie. So in the movie and the book, The Right Stuff, there's a part where John Glenn is orbiting the Earth. And I don't remember your scene, but he's orbiting the Earth and he looks outside do you call it a rocket? What do you call it? Do you call it a spaceship?
Sure, a rocket, spaceship. Yeah.
He looks outside the rocket and he sees these little tiny objects. And the sun is hitting, and they're glistening, and they're multicolored. And it's the most beautiful thing he's ever seen. And it's in the sun is just coming up. It's, not whatever that crepuscular.
Like the sun is coming over the earth?
Yes. And it's reflecting off these little things, and they're sparkling, and they're multicolored. And it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And he literally starts crying. And it's in the book and it's in the movie. And they don't know what it is.
Okay.
And they, a few years ago, after like 50 years, 60, whatever, they figured it out. And you know what it was?
What?
It was his pee.
Oh!
His pee goes...
The drops?
His pee goes out into the atmosphere. And it froze and crystallized. So it's these little drops of his pee that the sun is reflecting. And it's like a prism. And
Sure.
So the most beautiful thing he ever saw in his life, bringing him to tears, it's so beautiful. It's his urine.
Yeah, that's insane. A quick moment while I figure out why my... for some reason... My audio, I'm now shouting into the internet. Did you notice a quality difference in my internet?
It sounds the same to me.
Okay. Well, then it's probably the speaker and not. This is much like pee in space.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very mundane moment in podcasting. And we can only hope that now. Nope. What the devil, I say.
Hmm.
Well, we have to hope, I guess, that Patrick Brady can fix this in post.
Okay.
My condolences to Patrick Brady, and I will make a note of the time code, and I will turn off this fan. Okay. So,
these are just sort of anecdotes like that. I'm sorry.
Is that an example of what the anecdote's going to be like?
Yes. And they're all urine related, which is interesting.
You said no theme.
What if I dork out? That's what he dorked out about is urine. No, this is the only urine related one.
This is the only urine related. So here's my thing. What about us going into space and just P peeing out into space. Like, this feels like when we poured everything into the oceans because we thought,
right,
wow, it's huge. It's never, right, there's not going to be a problem.
Oh,
and now
absolutely
we have a giant plastic
there could
island
be some planet out there where an alien is being peed, and it's like, whoa, what is it?
Whoa, Chuck Berry golden. Here?
Right.
Shower.
Yes, a golden meteor shower. You never hear about those.
Brian Kiley, you guys, he just wrote a smart golden shower joke. You don't see it a lot. You don't see it a lot. What did you, do you remember the space? John, was John Glenn, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he was he the first American in space?
No, that's a common misconception.
Right.
He was actually the third American in space. They and also he's not the first person in space. The Russians, Yuri Gagarin was there. But they right sent up, and that's they sent up Alan Shepard for 15 minutes.
Okay.
Also known as Scott Glenn, the actor. It, don't get the Glenns confused.
Oh, that's why.
Yes, in the movie The Right Stuff, Scott
Glenn played Alan Shepard.
And Alan Shepard went up for about 15 minutes. And wow then came back that's down terrible and to a hero's welcome. The next guy was Gus Grissom. And he, when he came back down, the hatch blew. And it was like, did he do that? Or was a malfunction with the hatch itself? Maybe it wasn't his fault. But he didn't get the love that that Alan Shepard got. And then when John Glenn did, I believe he was the first, I'm not a historian, I'm only a comedian, but I think he was right the first American to orbit the Earth.
Okay.
So he got all kinds of fanfare. He got a, you know, ticket tape parade, all that stuff. But what he didn't get, he wanted to go back and go to the moon.
Right.
And JFK and LBJ were like, oh, no, no, you're an American hero. If anything happens to you, it'll be a terrible tragedy. So Alan Shepard did get to go back and get to go to the moon, but John Glenn didn't. He was so popular that they couldn't risk that.
Oh, losing him.
Yes.
And what about Grisham? They should have just sent him out a hatch out in space,
well,
since they clearly were so angry at him.
Gus Grissom died in a fire in the next, like the next time he was supposed to go out on the mission. The three guys and him, there was a fire in the capsule and it's pure oxygen, whatever, and they all died.
Oh, he was in that one?
He was in that one.
The one that blew up? That was a big deal.
That was a big deal. So he was going to, you know, go back in space, and then this happened. So John Glenn finally got to go to space when he was like 80 years old, when he was a senator. But he didn't get to go to the moon, but he got to go up like the way they do it now with like, you know, rock stars get to go up for 15 minutes with it. You know, he got one of those. Yeah.
I have a big belief that we should build a giant slingshot and put the Heritage Foundation into it and send it into the sun. that's my space travel plans. I always thought it was cool about, I mean, space travel. It was one of the big lies that I've been working on this bit about how, because I always thought I wanted to go to the moon or I wanted to go to space, but I don't. I just wanted to hang out with Han Solo and
talk,
right? I mean, I think I would die in space if I went to space. I don't have the science or math skills to not go giant red button. What does that do?
Right.
I would break it.
As a kid, I was interested in this stuff, of course, you know, whatever. And I thought maybe I could be an astronaut. And my parents were like, you get car sick when we drive to the Cape. You are not going anywhere near space. You can't ride on the tilt-a-whirl.
Ride for at length. I once was on a tilt-a-whirl on Coney Island, and the guy literally said, we're going till somebody throws up. And we went, and I thought it was going to be me. And I love a tilt-a-whirl, but I may not now. I haven't been on one since. But we went, and then all of a sudden he yelled, get the hose. And then he stopped it. And luckily it was not me, but someone did throw up.
It was probably me, but you're welcome.
At least it ended. Can you sail? Do you like sailing at all?
I'm a little cautious with sailing. If it's it's better if it's moving and if it's straight.
Okay. Like,
sometimes you get on a boat and it's just kind of waiting in the thing. But when my kids were little, we went on a whale watch that was supposed to be 3 hours. And for some reason, right, it was 5 hours.
Ooh.
And at the end, me and two small children, not my children, but two other small children, were all leaning over the side throwing up.
Oof.
And it was not good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I have to be careful. I can go sailing if it's a short duration and it's not choppy and whatever, you know?
Okay. That makes sense.
All right. Do you want the next one?
I do. I do want the next one.
So this one I was reading about this. So I can't remember the name of the astronaut. It was a guy who became an astronaut, but at the time he was just one of those test pilots. Cause they were test pilots for the Navy or for the, you know, the Marines or whatever. So,
right, there's movies about those guys. Yeah.
Yes. And this is during the Cold War. And sometimes there'd be like in areas that were kind of in between, like in sort of areas that were up for grabs or whatever. But these guys were flying these missions over near Iceland and the Soviet pilots would come nearby. So one time the American pilot later became an astronaut. The plane is coming towards him. And they're close to him, whatever. So he gives the guy the finger. He gives the Soviet guy the finger or whatever.
What?
Yes. So then about a month later, he's flying and that same pilot comes at him, towards him. And before he gets there, the Soviet pilot held up a little sign that said, "I fucked your sister." And the American pilot asked
him. Insane.
He split again, like he howled. He was like, "Okay, you got me."
And
thought it was funny.
That's hilarious. The fact that billions of dollars in all of this is certainly worth our tax dollars, so that two guys can flip each other off and be weird. Yeah,
the two guys who are kind of like frat dudes. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, entirely. I mean, if you think about, I mean, even an officer and a gentleman, you know, you were just like, yeah, I don't want to hang out with either of those guys. I don't know if you know this, but both of those guys seem like real douche nozzles. So,
well, there was a great scene in the, did you watch the show The Crown?
No, but Lori did.
Well, it's funny. I've
heard about it.
I really, if you ask me about the royal family, I'd be much more interested in like King Henry VIII and Elizabeth I than this stuff.
Okay.
But the show was so good. And there was an episode where the astronauts go to the moon, and I'm blanking on whatever Queen Elizabeth's husband's name is. I can't remember now.
Albert?
Is it Albert?
Edward?
Is it Philip? Prince Philip?
Philip.
I think it's Prince Philip. So,
okay.
And the actor, the British actor, was so good who plays him. But he's watching this stuff, and he's so into the moon landing and the whole thing, and the whole he's got these just the philosophical ramifications about it. Like he wants to meet the astronauts, and they come to London, and they have a busy schedule, but they agree to meet with him for a few minutes.
Okay.
And they're just bro-y dudes. And he's so bummed out. Like he really wants some wisdom from these guys that have traveled to the moon and they're looking back on Earth. And it was like, no. And his disappointment was so funny. So that's has nothing to do with anything.
But I will say this is that because the people who did you ever see Hidden Figures?
Yes.
So it's all the nerds who are sending them to the moon. And then all the bro-y guys who go to the moon. And then eventually the bro-y guys who go to the moon are like, I think there's money in being the nerd. And because I have a lot of theories anyway. So, you know how like the scientific nerd guys will see something in science. They'll read science fiction and they'll be like, oh, you want to do that? I can invent it where you could talk to the computer. What do you want to do? Right. And they assume that it's going to be used for good.
Right.
And because they're watching Star Trek and they're like, oh, you want to walk up to a door and have the doors part when you just go up automatically? Well, we'll put a plate in the ground and it'll be for grocery stores. And but that's how that was invented.
Sure.
It was because nerds saw that and they were like, Yeah, I can make that.
Yes. But the whole space program, it's the chess club building stuff for the football team.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh, it's exactly what that is.
Yes.
You lost an AirPod. Did.
I got it. All right. So this is one. I was listening to this podcast. This is about, okay, so Sitting Bull. Sitting Bull had a wife named Snow on her. First of all, the Native American names are the greatest. They're so cool.
That's awesome.
So then he took a second wife.
Uh-oh.
Named Fairhair. So now he's got two wives. And sure. I don't want to, you know, spoiler alert.
This guy from 130 years ago, yes?
Yes. The two wives, you would think, guy gets two wives, they're going to be friends. No, they didn't like each other at all. And they didn't like the idea of him having two wives. So at night, he had to sleep with them on either side of him. And he had to sleep on his back. And if he turned on his side, the one who had his back to would throw a tantrum. So he just had to sleep like he was sunning himself.
That's insane. You know what I mean? That made you laugh when you were reading that book?
Oh my God, I died.
Well, because that backfires. Because you think, two wives.
Absolutely.
I get to have sexy times.
I know, absolutely. And I know a lot of your listeners would like to have two wives or two husbands. You know what I mean? But they might get twice now.
Polyamory is one of the big demographics in the Dork Forest. It is not. It is not a big demographic in anything because there aren't that many people who are doing it. But the people who I know are doing it, Maria Bamford's actually doing a very funny joke about how you got to figure out who wants to be CC'd and who wants to be BCC'd. Anyway, so
that is the problem with polyamory. That's so funny.
I think Bill Dwyer used to do a joke about Mormons having several wives and why you would get, you know, because I just need one more because I got the bunk bed situation. I just want to even out. And so, but more than one partner just feels like a lot of work, doesn't it?
Oh my God. Yeah. That's like,
can't you just talk the person into going open relationship or just get a divorce?
To listen to two people's days?
Oh, a lot of day. A lot of day.
You know?
Yeah.
That's tough. And also getting all three to agree on what show we're going to watch?
Or where to go to dinner? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yes.
I would reconsider for those fans of yours who are thinking.
it feels like a young person's game.
Yes.
Polyamory. I
agree. You should do a dark forest about somebody who's into polyamory. Do you know what I mean?
Could do. Sure. I'm sure. Jackie Cash and me, you guys, you know, I'm around anyway.
Okay. So this one, this is a story. It was from, I'm blanking in the name of the book now but it was about the Plymouth colony in,
okay. You know,
like I think the book is called Mayflower, but okay. In that book, something happens where they discover this Native American who's 7 feet tall and they capture him and they bring him to England. They're British citizens and they capture this guy and he's a novelty because not only is he a Native American, but he's 7 feet tall. So they bring him to London. And while the guy's there, the 7 foot tall Native American realizes, hey, these people are, they love gold. So he tells them, I know where there's a, whoops, hold on a second.
Oh, you got your own issues?
I do. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm back. Whoosh, God damn. I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's an exciting time. I'm speaking with Brian Kylie, by the way, and his Instagram is Kylie Brian Comic.
Okay.
And he is very funny. He's also
I ruined the story. Okay. So he discovers that these people, oh my God, what is happening?
They're obsessed with
all right, I'm gonna shut this off.
Okay. Patrick, we would like to apologize again. Patrick Brady, audio.
So, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Should I start the story over?
Yeah.
Yes, let me do that. Okay. So in the book Mayflower, the Plymouth colonists, they discover a Native American who's 7 feet tall. And he's
so they kidnap him and they freak show him off to England.
They freak, absolutely. And while he's there, he realizes that the people here, they love gold. So he says to them, you know, I know where there's a gold mine in Martha's Vineyard, but only I know where it is. And they're like, will you show us where it is? And he's like, sure. So they put him on a ship and they bring him back across the ocean, and he spots Martha's Vineyard in the distance, and he dives off the ship and swims away, and they never see him again.
That is a 3 points for the home team right there. That's what that is.
Isn't that fantastic?
That is fantastic.
I just picture them coming back and they go, okay, do you have the gold? Well, we don't have the gold. It's like, well, do you have the Indian? Well, here's the thing.
We don't have the guy either.
We don't have the guy either.
He might have played us. He might have played us. Good for him. And turns out he was just tall. He wasn't an idiot.
And he was tall and not dumb, in fact. Not dumb by any means. So I just love him outsmarting them is the greatest.
That's awesome. All right,
so there's no segues with these.
No.
These are random. They're just things that I found in books. I happened upon while reading a series.
Do you read a lot of nonfiction?
I do. I read a lot of history. I do. I will kind of cleanse the palate with like a classic novel.
Oh, wow.
Or, you know, you read something, then you read but people always assume I don't read novels, which I do, but I do read a lot of history books and I enjoy those.
Okay.
So in the 1770s, the Montgolfier brothers in France,
okay,
they invent the hot air balloon.
Wow.
This is the first, you know, air travel.
Wait, and in the 1770s?
In the 1770s.
And how are you spelling that French name? M-O-N?
M-O-N-T-G-O-L-E-I-F, something like that.
Something like that? Okay. So the brothers, like the Wright brothers, but balloon Wright brothers.
I don't know what it is about flight. You can't do it by yourself. You need a brother.
It's a buddy system. Yeah.
Yes. But it's for some reason, like an only child, you can fly, you can be a pilot, but you can't invent for whatever reason.
Right.
And I don't know. But these guys, they invent this, but since it's brand new, they don't put anybody in the first one. Because eventually they would put like a chicken or like a rooster or something and send that up in the basket to see how that goes.
That feels
disposable.
And then
they work their way up to humans.
Right.
But initially, and I don't know if this was was where the expression trial balloon comes from. I'm not sure. Could be. But anyway, they send up they create this balloon. They do this experiment and the balloon goes up in the air and then it just goes off and goes far away.
Ooh.
So there's a village about 20 miles away. Those people look up and they're like, oh my God, what is that? Right? They've never seen anything like this or heard anything.
Right.
So the villagers all come out of their hovels and I'm assuming they're hovels. And they
peasantry, 1770s. Rural
yes,
France.
Absolutely. The poor people, they work in the land and they follow this balloon. And then the balloon eventually gradually comes down to earth.
Sure.
And when it lands, they beat it with sticks.
The balloon.
Yes.
Wow. Is there a chicken in it?
No, they didn't know they didn't know what that was. They were so frightened of this thing in the sky.
I went a different way with that balloon story. I thought that there might have been a chicken in it, and they thought that chickens had mastered flight.
Oh.
That's where I went.
Well, if chickens had mastered flight, it would have had to be two sibling chickens. It's going to be two brothers chickens.
And chickens, I think, can chickens fly? They have feathers. I think that they were bred to not fly, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Hens?
I think their wings are – the only purpose of their wings is to enjoy during football games, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Good times. Good times are El Pollo Loco. One crazy chicken. So they beat the balloon to death, and then they wrote the Song of Roland. I don't know exactly what – that's ridiculous. Did he get his balloon back? Do you have any idea?
I think they kind of wrote that off as a business expense.
And nobody could call him and say, hey, we found your balloon.
Yeah.
Exactly. And 20 miles. That's a long way in 17.
A long way away. So, yeah.
Wow.
All right.
What else you got?
All right.
I'm loving these, by the way, Brian.
Are you really?
These are great. Yes.
Thank you. These are the kind of stories that my family does not want to hear from me. I've tried and none of them are interested.
Right. But they're short. They should be perfectly fine at the dinner table. And then they can talk about whatever they want to talk about.
Thank you. They're little conversation starters, right?
Sure.
They can lead to other comedic ideas or whatever.
Right. And I had an anecdote and I had a theory about everyone so far.
Absolutely.
All right.
I would much rather have dinner with you than anyone in my family.
They seem great. I think that they want to discuss baseball.
Right. Right.
There seems to be a great deal of baseball being covered. I like the hats.
Yes.
That's my favorite thing about baseball.
Oh, that's true. I do love the hats. I have many caps. All right. This is a very strange one. So there was a famous actress in the 1800s. Oh, yes. I would say the late 1800s.
Okay.
Maybe early 1900s, named Sarah Bernhardt. She was
right?
You've heard of her, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Very famous. I believe she was in France, and she was a very famous stage actress. And she had some kind of an accident on stage where she injured her leg. And they didn't take care of it. And then gangrene was setting in. Ooh. So they severed her leg.
They had to take part of her leg off?
Yes, from like the knee down, they had to take part of her leg off. So she continued to act, but she could only be in roles where she was seated and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So she met...
Leaning,
I guess.
Side of a hill? Anyway, just kidding. Go ahead.
Bringing a side of a hill on stage is tricky, though. Do you know what I mean?
Set designers love that stuff.
So I don't know. Maybe she did. Maybe she started leaning. I don't know. But she saw Houdini, and she saw a Houdini show.
Okay.
And she got to meet with Houdini afterwards. You know, she got to go get the VIP. You know, she probably didn't even have to pay for the meet and greet. She probably just got to go backstage.
Right, right. Got a headshot for free. Sure.
Yeah, two celebrities. And when she met him, she asked him if he could restore her leg.
Uh-oh. Sarah. Magic's not real.
He's magic. Mm. And she was so convinced his magic was real. And Houdini had to say, no, I do tricks. And I get out of locks that people have put in me.
And then did he at any time say, is this your card? That's insane.
Said, I cannot. However, did you have a seven of diamonds?
Right. Much like the Native American guy, just tall. It turns out you could be a great actress and be dumb as a post.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That's unfortunate. Poor thing.
It is unfortunate. Mm. But you know, we know actors like that in our generation.
Right. Here's my thing though, but now I have an anecdote or an opinion, shall we say, about actors. I don't know if you ever saw My Favorite Year, one of my favorite movies.
With
Peter O'Toole.
Yes.
Mark Lynn Baker. Yes.
Strangers.
Yes. Mark Lynn Baker. And he says to Peter O'Toole, I think that there's part of you that is a hero. I don't think anybody's that good of an actor. What he says to Peter O'Toole, because Peter O'Toole says, I'm not that stupid hero that you think I am. I'm an actor. And Mark Lynn Baker says, I don't think anyone's that good of an actor. I think that hero is inside of you somewhere. And that made me think, I wonder if Nicole Kidman is actually a bit of a whore with a heart of gold. Or, I mean, you can't tell. You can't tell with people. But there is someone who I don't know if I would want to have dinner with him because he's such an amazing actor. He might be an empty vessel of a person. And this man and this person, Michael Douglas.
Interesting.
That guy, he could be anything. good guy, bad guy, dumb guy, smart guy. Funny, not funny. Yeah.
Yes, an amazing career. I enjoy him more as a bad guy than as a good guy.
Personally. Oh, do you?
I do. Because you know what he does so well with the bad guy is he doesn't take it too far. Do you know what I mean? He's still human. He's still human. He just turns the dial a little bit. He never gets cartoonishly bad.
Ooh, right. You know what I
mean? And you're just like, ooh, I hate this guy. But it's...
My favorite good guy role of his is the American president.
Okay. Sure.
So yeah. He plays a very good conflicted good guy, like Romancing the Stone.
Right.
Or Hank Pym.
Hank Pym.
He's in Ant-Man. The movies, the Ant-Man movies, he plays Henry Pym.
Oh, okay.
So he is a grumpy good guy. He plays a pretty much like vaguely conflicted.
Yeah. I mean, he's got quite like, if you go on his IMDb, right?
Oh, there's a lot of performances.
And people stopped confusing him with Mike Douglas, the daytime talk show host, a few years ago.
What does Sarah Bernhardt often, does anyone ever ask if she's related? Does Sandra Bernhardt ever get the,
I bet she does. Do you know what I mean? Like, especially if she's going to meet some of like Houdini's offspring, that's probably the first thing they talk about. You know what I mean?
And not have to pay to see them.
Right. Right.
And they're just like, there's a coin coming out of your nose. Anyway. So, let's hear another one. I think we milked this one as much as I can.
Okay. And you can cut out any of the ones you don't like, of course. You know what I mean? Like these, I'm just giving you a broad.
This is a nice sampling. This is nice. Oh,
thank you. All right. So this I found interesting. So in the 1800s, there were no fences around the White House.
Okay. And
people would picnic on the lawn.
Yeah.
I love that. And
that's awesome.
At one point, there were some budget cuts. And there were times when President Grover Cleveland would have to answer the front door himself.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
Isn't that hilarious? Can you imagine ringing the doorbell at the White House and the president being, ah, what now?
I'm busy trying to pass this. And what's interesting to me is that the White House has a doorbell.
Well, perhaps
it might have a knocker. It would probably have a knocker.
You're right. Right. It might have been a knocker. But you
what
get
else do we know about Grover Cleveland?
Well, he had two separate terms.
Okay. Oh, that's right. He was interrupted.
He married a 19-year-old woman when he was in – that they got married in the White House.
Oh.
And they had a child named Ruth. And so years later in the 20s – the whatever the candy bar company is, they come out with a candy bar called the Baby Ruth. And
wait, I thought that was named after.
That's what everyone. See, here's the thing. They said, "Oh no, it's not named after Babe Ruth because if it was named after Babe Ruth, they would have had to pay royalties to Babe Ruth."
That
so they said it's named after Grover Cleveland's baby girl,
infant,
which was a lie. However, it covered them. And they didn't have to pay Babe Ruth or his family anything.
Nobody smarter than a capitalist trying to get away with getting away with no royalties.
And I think that that candy bar still exists, right?
I believe so. I believe so.
100 years later, they've gotten off.
The Babe Ruth estate. There's probably still a Babe Ruth estate, right? Sure. I don't know if he had any kids, but he probably had a cousin or something.
He did have kids. In fact, here's a crazy thing. So. I don't want to have to go too much into this, but when my mother's mother died, my grandfather put his two daughters in this boarding school because he was like, what's he going to do? Do you know what I mean? And
I'm sure he knew what he meant. Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's like he, as a, you know, I don't know if there were a lot of single dads in those days, but he traveled a lot and it was like, what am I going to do? I've got these kids.
Right.
So he put his, and my aunt was in this boarding school and Babe Ruth's daughter went there.
Okay.
And so my mom used to tell the story about how Babe Ruth came by one day and all the kids lined up and shook his hand or whatever. So I'm reading this biography of Babe. She told me this when I was like a young child, but it's a story she would tell frequently. So I read this Babe Ruth biography a couple of years ago called Big Fella, and it's about Babe Ruth. And at one point they say he went to go visit his daughter at this school in Wellesley. I'm like, that was
She was never lying.
She was not lying. I assumed she was a pathological liar. There you go. There's actual proof in a book that this happened.
Right. My stepmother's mother told me that she went to high school with Liberace. And so she was a huge Liberace fan, but she also liked to say, you know, it's just sad that he can't meet the right girl. Always had a crush on him. And we never had the guts to tell her that he probably met a lot of the right girls.
I love those stories.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And my mother was one of those people. Why can't he meet the, you know, not, but Liberace specifically, but people.
That what a waste.
Yeah.
Here's the good news. It wasn't wasted.
No.
So.
Yes.
Which is actually a line from Victor Victoria, one of my other favorite movies. that's Julie Andrews, Robert Preston, James Garner.
The Music Man guy?
The musical movie called Victor Victoria.
So Robert Preston from The Music Man.
From The Music Man plays Julie Andrews' friend, and James Garner plays an American mobster nightclub guy. And it is a love story because Julie Andrews pretends to be a woman pretending to be a man. She pretends to be a drag queen.
Gotcha.
It is one of the greatest movies ever made. It is by the guy who did the Pink Panther. Actually, there is two or three bad scenes in it, and they are Pink Panther scenes that I just want to get that guy and go, just take him out. Anyway.
Yes. Yeah, you know, I love the Pink Panther movies when I was a kid. And when I showed them to my kids, because I remember it being one laugh after another. Oh, no. It's funny scene, 10 minutes of paint dry, funny scene, and so on.
So slow.
Right?
Yeah. It's grim.
Yes.
I hear that the new Naked Gun is good, though.
Oh, you do? I'm so dying to see that.
I love Liam Neeson.
I love Liam Neeson. And I also love the idea of comedy movies being a thing again. Right.
I was Mike Drucker, who's been on this program several times, said that you need to see it in the theater surrounded by people. See it with people.
I want comedy movies to come back because it's all superhero movies now, whatever.
Right. Right. So, right. I love a good superhero. I even love a mediocre superhero movie.
But don't you enjoy a good comedy movie?
I don't. I usually don't. But, right. I think the last comedy movie that I liked was The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Oh, I don't
which
know.
Which is a Wallace and Gromit claymation.
Oh, I love Wallace and Gromit. Okay.
Yes.
But there's a movie, Thelma. Did you see that movie, Thelma?
No.
So June Squibb, it's starring June Squibb. And June Squibb is 95 years old.
Okay.
In real life.
Oh, in real life.
In real life. And she's starring in a movie.
Wow.
It's the most unbelievable.
I don't have the energy to star in a movie right now.
Well, it's interesting because I recently a 101-year-old man contacted me.
For real.
He was in vaudeville and AGT is interested in putting him on.
Okay.
So he asked me to write some stuff for him. So I met with him a couple of times. He couldn't be a nicer guy. The first time I met with him and he says, I missed the deadline for this year. We'll have to do it next year.
Good for him.
That is some optimism that I wish I had. He is a great guy. I said, I've never met a man who lived to be 100. I've met several women. I've met a half dozen women who lived to be 100, but never a man. And he said, well, introduce me to them. Which I thought was a fantastic line.
He might not need you.
I don't think he does. Isn't that great?
Right. You know, it's weird. My dad always thinks he's going to die in August. So I always visit him at the end of August, right around September 1st. Literally on September 2nd, I get a call from him every year going, well, I guess I'm good.
What made him think that August is his thing?
He insists that we all die in August. I don't have the guts to tell them we mostly die in July, but
what if there's some like Twilight Zone thing where they're like, it's like a Julian calendar versus the Gregorian calendar thing. You
know what I mean? Maybe it's a Chinese placemat calendar. Who knows? Who thinks he's going to die in the year of the rabbit?
Thinking that they're going to die in a specific month.
Yeah. I don't know how he sold himself this bill of goods, but he spends 11 months not worrying about dying.
Does he really want to avoid the back to school shopping or something? What is it?
he's bored these days. He did make me laugh so hard because he's always talked to telemarketers. It's his favorite thing. And now that he no longer has a car, he milks it. So he told me that some guy called him last week and said he had a $4 million and change check for him. And my dad was like, what I liked was that it was not just $4 million. There were several thousands and then some actual change. I like that he made it interesting.
Yes.
And he talked to him for a half an hour. And he was like, God. So, well, this is flattering. Why would someone have, why do I get this? And a lot of other people don't get this. And he talked to the guy for a half an hour. And the guy's like, I just need your bank account number and I can send it to you. And he goes, and finally my dad goes, well, you know what? Send me the paperwork. I'll fill it out and I'll send it back to you. I'll get my grandsons to help me. And he goes, oh, we don't do it. We do it all over the phone. And my dad goes, oh, well, I have dementia. And my dad does not have dementia. He just loves to say that he has dementia and obviously doesn't believe that he's going to jinx himself into getting dementia.
Sure. But his only fear is August. That's interesting.
His only fear is August.
But I think it's, I love the bit you do.
I'm writing that down.
I love the bit you do about your dad with the, and I can't, does he sell blinds and sells, and the person selling
awnings, awnings versus shades?
Yes.
Yes.
He sold them an awning. Right, and he shades, and he said, why didn't you sell them shades? Because I don't sell shades, I sell awnings.
I sell awnings. They could have used shades. They could have installed them themselves, but now you got to hire a guy. Okay. Yes.
Oh.
Okay, let's keep going. You only have 10 minutes. I'm so sorry.
Okay. I'm glad I'm not going to run out. Okay, this is one that I found so interesting. So during World War II, the beginning of World War II,
ooh, we're in the 20th century, you guys.
Yes, I am jumping around. But FDR is supposed to meet with Churchill.
Right.
So they decide to meet it in Morocco at Casablanca. Like the Casablanca.
How romantic.
Yeah. Jesus. Maybe they just love the movie so much. They're like, we got to meet there. So FDR is flying there, of course. And they're worried that here's the president. It's in the middle of a war. What if his plane gets shot down?
Right.
So on the plane, one of the passengers is an expert swimmer. And the idea is if the plane gets shot down, if the president is in the water, the swimmer would be there to keep him afloat until they were rescued.
Right. Because he has polio.
He's got polio.
Right.
Isn't that the most, it's like, well, why, you know, I told my son this, he's like, why don't they just give him a life jacket? It's like, I don't know what to tell you, but they put an expert swimmer, like, I don't know whose idea that was.
Might have just been a backup plan. Like, I'm sure it was going to be, you get a parachute, you get a life jacket, and you also get Jim from accounting, who has always wanted to swim the channel. So that's hilarious.
Yes.
Weird.
So weird.
Weird historical facts.
So I mentioned Churchill. Okay. Oh, there's one thing I quickly want to mention. So I just read this biography of Peter the Great, which is a fantastic biography. It's got this guy, Robert Massey, who when I lived in Westchester in New York, he lived in our town. And they had a thing where they had writers that were going to kind of do this little mentorship program with these seventh graders. So I go there, Robert Massey, who's like Pulitzer Prize winning historian, and then there's me who I would
or be 13.
You know, I'm writing jokes about Chris Christie for Conan. Do you know what I mean?
Oh.
And the idea that the two of us are these writer mentors, it's like, well,
oh my God,
I think this guy's a little above me. But anyway, he wrote this fantastic biography of P. Peter the Great. So Peter the Great, when he was the Tsar of Russia, he was like 6'7".
Okay.
And this is like around 1700, so you can imagine. But sometimes—
Did the English come for him? I'm so sorry.
He would be— sometimes there's a crowd of people, and if it was chilly, he would just pluck the wig off somebody and put it on his own head to keep himself warm.
What?
Which, I just love that. It's like, he's the emperor. What are you going to do? Hey, give me that. And he would just—
Wow. I'm glad he didn't just make everybody cuddle him.
No,
that's
no,
insane.
That's true.
That's so weird.
I just love that. It's so weird. Okay. Yeah. So Churchill, Winston Churchill, there's some great stories about him.
Sure.
You know, actually, I have a lot of stories here. I have to pick the right ones.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd end. Okay. Churchill, there's one time he's at some party and he's drinking, whatnot, and his fly is down.
Ooh.
So he's standing up and there's this woman who's sitting there and she looks over and his fly is down and she's, oh, you know, flustered that his prime minister's fly is down. And
right.
He apologizes and he zips his thing and he says, don't worry, madam. A dead bird seldom falls from its perch. And first of all, dead birds fall from their perch all the time. Makes no sense.
Right, right. But that's how they fall.
Of course. But I just love the idea that the Prime Minister of England, Winston Churchill, one of the great orators in history, is referring to his dick as a dead bird.
He's just like, don't be scared. Don't be scared.
Don't be scared.
Doug Stanhope has said something comparable. He's just like, don't worry about it. It doesn't really work. Because he's constantly dropping trout.
Yes. And there's another story. If Churchill's somewhere and he's at the urinal and the head of the Labour Party comes in and goes to pee at the next urinal and Churchill moves over. And the guy's like, what are you embarrassed? He said, no, every time you see something big, you want to nationalize it. And I just love, you know, to me, Winston Churchill dick jokes
is that what you wanted to close on? Did you want to close on the next?
I'm famous for closing on dick jokes, as you know.
It's hard to follow once you write in stand-up comedy. If you've written a dick joke, it's hard to follow your own dick jokes.
That's true. I do have other.
We do have time if you want to. Yeah, we have plenty of time.
Okay,
we can go over.
So I have a bunch of I don't know which one's going to be strong enough to close.
Did you ever get to meet Howard Zinn? Have you ever read any of his books?
No. You know what? He was good friends with my friend Barry Crimmins, and I did read I have that book somewhere right near here about the people's history of the United States.
Yeah. I saw him speak once. It was
really
amazing. Yes.
That's a good one. That was a good one.
Right, right. Yeah. It's like meeting the guy who wrote the Tsar book.
Yes. I did get to meet a few historians that did Conan.
Famous
David
cool historians.
And Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Okay.
And the guy who wrote the Teddy Roosevelt books.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. All right, here's an interesting fun thing. On the Hindenburg.
Okay.
Do you know
that was the balloon that blew up?
Yes. Do you know that there were people on the Hindenburg smoking.
So that doesn't mean that they deserved it, but news, they kind of deserved it.
But you're on a hydrogen tube, right?
Right. And nobody said, hey man,
you might
want to blaze up.
Yes. And the other thing is, did you know people survived the Hindenburg?
No, I did not know that.
Yes. Not only did more people survive it than died on it. So it was like, had something
How
like.
How many people were on it?
Like 97.
Okay.
35 died.
Okay.
And 62 people walked away.
Okay.
Now, we're comics. We've had some bad flights.
Sure. But you think about 9/11, the people who died, like the ones who jumped from the tall hop high, you forget that a lot of people lived.
Right.
And I
don't. The people on the planes didn't live.
Oh, no. No, they didn't.
So right, this, right. Your people are actually on the Hindenburg, and it crashes, bursts into flames, and they
walk
off.
Some people walk away. Yes. Yeah, that's amazing.
Right?
Did anyone live in the plane that the Pennsylvania planes?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Okay, C.S. Lewis?
Yes, I love C.S. Lewis.
Right? Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and so on?
Never read the Narnia. Couldn't do it. Missed a window.
He's also a philosopher.
Sure.
What did you read of him?
His space trilogy, incredibly apropos of today's political situation.
Oh, interesting.
Out of the Silent Planet, Paralandra tells you the purpose of hate. And then the last one, That Hideous Strength is the name of the third one. But it's the space trilogy. I've also read a little bit of the Screwtape Letters and stuff like that.
Yes, yes, yes. I've actually had crowds at my shows teach me the point of hate. But I'm off topic. And then Aldous Huxley, are you familiar with him?
I've heard of what? Why do I know that name?
He wrote a famous book called Brave New World.
Yes, I never read that. That seemed that seemed depressing.
It's a little bit of, you know, it's kind of like a 1984 type of futuristic dystopian.
Handmaid's Tale. Yeah, yes, I'm good.
Yeah. If you're into that kind of thing. The two of them, they both died on the same day.
Okay.
You ready for this? C.S. Lewis and Aldous Huxley, they both died on the same day and no one cared because they died on November 22nd, 1963.
Is that when Kennedy got shot?
Yep. They died the same day.
You have a very dark sense of humor, Brian Kiley. This is what we've learned in this hour.
I thought it was the Dark Forest. There was a typo in the email. this is what's going to happen to me. I'm going to die. It'll be like the same day like Steve Martin dies or.
Oh, right.
Do you know what I mean?
And Dick Cavett. Yeah.
Right. No one will notice. My family won't even notice because they're too busy grieving Steve Martin's death. Do you know what I mean? That's what's going to happen to me.
Sure. Well, on that cheerful note, tell me something else. What do you want to leave on? You got one? You got anything from the 21st century? Anything funny historical happened in the last 25 years?
The only recent one the only one from this century is when Mandela died, Nelson Mandela died.
Okay.
At the funeral, all the world leaders are there.
Mm-hmm.
They hire a guy to do the sign language, to do a sign language interpreter,
Whatever you call it. Oh my gosh.
And he doesn't know sign language.
They find out afterwards.
Yes. It's a fraud. He's a fraud.
He's a fraud.
Yes. And so you've got Obama's there and Angela Merkel, all these people, right?
Yes.
Sign language, you kind of have to be somewhat of an actor. Like your facial expressions and the way you gesture and so on. It's not just the symbols. You've got to kind of act it out. This guy is totally impassive, stone face. He's signing.
Gesturing?
Just gibberish. And you wouldn't know unless you know sign language. But any person who knows sign language is like, what the hell is this guy doing? And here's like one of the biggest events of the century, right?
Yeah, arguably.
The most loved man in the world. They're all at his memorial. And they went with the cheapest bid. Like people bid to be the sign language guy. He was the cheapest. So they went with him and they did no background check or whatever. And you have an insane person who's just.
It would have been very funny to find out that he was actually deaf. So he didn't even know what they were saying. Oh my gosh. That is actually a pretty good one to end on. Cause that's
is that a
insane.
Good one to end on? Okay. Good.
That's yes.
Okay.
Brian Kiley, you guys, always a delight, always a treat when he's on the program. It is Kiley Brian comic. Brian is not spelled with a Y. It is spelled with an I, just regular, normal Brian Kiley. So Kiley Brian comic, Kiley is spelled in the Irish way, I believe.
Yes.
And comic is spelled like comic as opposed to comedian, which is something horrible. Thank
it's an
you.
Outdated term. Like, oh. Yeah, you know, my favorite outdated term like that is aviatrix.
Aviatrix? What about manageress? I worked at a movie theater in London for 3 months in 1989, and my manageress insisted on being called a manageress.
Oh my God, I don't think I've ever heard of that.
It was quite a tongue twister, especially when I was drunk.
Just call me a tiger. Do you know what I mean?
Rangers, you've listened to the Dork Forest. You've chosen wisely. And don't forget the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?